So Obadiah, the shortest book in the Old Testament, a little prophecy, addressed to the Edomites. And the Edomites would certainly have said, oh bad, when they heard this prophecy. It's a poetic judgment against the people of Edom upon them. We need to start off with a little bit of background, really. Obadiah is actually a very common name in the Old Testament. I say very common. There's 12 Obadiahs, apparently, in the Old Testament. But we don't know very much about this Obadiah at all. His name means servant of Yahweh. You might just note that in verse 1, it says the vision of Obadiah, and then in the next line it says, this is what the sovereign Lord says about Edom. So the vision of Obadiah is equated with what the sovereign Lord says. This is a picture of what the Bible is like. Human authors, but it's the words of God that are being recorded. God speaking through human beings, using their personality, but it's his word that is recorded in the Bible. This is the inspiration or the God-breathed nature of the scriptures. Who then are these Edomites? Actually, as you read through the prophecy, there are different names given to them. So the Edomites, Esau, Teman, and I'm not sure if Mount Seir is in this or not. I don't think it was it? But that's another name elsewhere in the Bible as well. They all refer to the same group of people. It's a question of sibling rivalry that we need to understand this. Edom comes from Esau, and Esau was the brother of Jacob. And going back to Genesis chapter 25, we can hear how these things started. Genesis 25 and verse 23. The Lord said to Rebekah, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other. The older will serve the younger. When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel. So he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. The boys grew up and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was a quiet man staying among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, quick, let me have some of the red stew, I'm famished. That is why he's called Edom. Jacob replied, first sell me your birthright. Look, I'm about to die, Esau said. What good is the birthright to me? But Jacob said, swear to me first. So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank and then got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. This rivalry that started with Jacob and Esau was continued through history with the people of, well, the descendants of Esau and the descendants of Jacob, who are Israel. So in the book of Exodus, you can read about when Israel had escaped from Egypt and they were wandering through the desert towards the promised land. Edom was already an established nation and they wouldn't let the Israelites pass through, even though they promised not to take anything, not to even take any water from the wells without paying for things. Edom would not let them go through, but threatened them with an army instead. In the time of King David, he conquered Edom and they became subservient to Israel. A bit later in the Old Testament, in the time of King Jehoshaphat, you can read about how Edom tried to rebel against Israel. There's a wonderful story in 2 Chronicles chapter 20 about that, where the Lord delivers the people of Israel from Edom plus Edom had a few friends with them, the Moabites and the Ammonites, coming against Israel. But the Lord delivered the nation of Israel. The Levites went out in front of the army declaring the praises of God. And these enemies, the Edomites amongst them, just set on each other instead of conquering Israel. But then, under King Jehoram, Jehoshaphat's son, Edom did successfully rebel. And the writer of Chronicles says, to this day, they've still got their own king. So they were separate then from Israel. This sibling rivalry continuing through the two nations. They lived in a mountainous territory, difficult to attack, and of which they are proud. And you can see that in verses 2 to 4, how they think they're safe in their high mountain places. We can summarize the message to Edom as judgment is coming because. Judgment is coming because. It's going to be a severe judgment if we can just skim through the first few verses. God's going to make them small. They'll be utterly despised. He's going to bring them down. They'll be ransacked and pillaged. They'll be deceived by allies and friends. Wise men will be destroyed. They'll be cut down, covered with shame, and destroyed. This is a comprehensive judgment upon a nation of Edom. Why is God so severe against this nation? Well, verses 11 to 14 give the reasons for that. They relate to the time when the nation of Israel was being taken over by Babylon. Babylon was the big power at that time in the late 500s BC. Babylon was taking over Israel, and Edom, who was a brother nation by history, did not help out. Verse 11 says they stood aloof. They didn't help against the Babylonians. But more than that, verse 12, they didn't just stand aloof, they rejoiced at Israel's destruction. And more than that, verse 13, they joined in the looting. They went to see what they could get for themselves from the villages and towns of Israel. And more than that, verse 14, and they refused refuge to any Israelites that were fleeing towards their nation, either pushing them back to the armies of Babylon who killed them, or maybe indeed killing them themselves as well. Edom was judged because of their attitude towards God's people. They didn't help God's people, which showed a contempt for God. If you want a New Testament example that could go alongside that, you can think of the parable of the sheep and the goats in Matthew chapter 25. Remember the story, the parable that Jesus tells, that some people helped those in need and some people didn't. And at judgment, they were judged for helping or not helping. As you've helped them, you've helped me, Jesus said. Because people's action towards God's people shows their acceptance or non-acceptance of God. We can see back from the time of Edom as well. Edom despised his birthright, it says. Abraham had amazing promises from God that his nation would be great, that God would bless it. Abraham's son Isaac, do you not think he would have passed these promises on to Jacob and Esau as they grew up? And yet, despite all those promises, Esau's not concerned about his birthright. The eldest son, he doesn't want to take on those promises. He's more interested in stew than in being the servant of God. And that attitude seems to have continued in Esau's descendants. Esau didn't trust in the promises of God. We should note here as we go by as well that in history, certainly throughout the Old Testament, we have the picture that God judges nations. It's a common theme through the Old Testament. And he judges them according to how they respond to him and how they treat his people. But his own nation, Israel, are not exempt from God's judgment either. And that's why the Babylonians conquered Israel, because that was a judgment from God to draw his people back, to punish them for a time, to draw them back to trust in him. If the word of God endures forever, then we should infer that this kind of judgment of nations will continue afterwards as well. And we might then think of world history and the ups and downs of different empires through world history, maybe due to the judgments of God at different times through history. God judges nations. The Bible does reveal that he also judges individuals as well. So if a nation is judged, but there's innocent individuals within that nation, then I believe they'll be safe in God's eternal judgment, as opposed to his here and now judgment on this earth. We shouldn't join the two things too closely together. So the first part is about judgment. Judgment particularly upon Edom, which makes us think about God's judgment. The second part broadens things out beyond Edom, a message to all nations. Verse 15, the day of the Lord is near for all nations. The day of the Lord is the day for universal judgment, when God will judge all things and all men and all women, all who've ever lived. But there'll also be deliverance on Mount Zion, it says in verse 17. A restoration for Israel, an expansion of their territory, but not just a human kingdom. It ends in verse 21. This is God's kingdom, and the kingdom will be the Lord's. This fulfillment of the restoration of Israel perhaps can be seen in different stages. Certainly, after the Babylonian conquest, 70 years later, Israel went back to the land. Some of them chose to stay in Babylon, other places around the world, but many went back to Jerusalem and re-established the nation of Israel. But we might also look to today and see that in our generation, there's been a returning to Israel as well. The re-establishment of a nation of Israel in 1948. And there may be mixed opinions on that, whether the secular state of Israel is the same as God's kingdom of Israel. But there's probably a mixture between the two there. But also the final fulfillment will be in the return of Jesus, when his full judgment will take place and his kingdom is completely set up. But there's a prophecy there from Obadiah that this judgment is certain and that deliverance is certain as well, and restoration for God's people. So mainly this prophecy is about the judgment of nations, it seems, but we must consider a personal response also. As I mentioned, Esau was more concerned about his food, about his stew, than the promises about God, and so he sold his birthright. Jacob was by no means perfect, was he? If you read the stories of Jacob in Genesis, he wasn't perfect. He a bit of a liar and a cheater, really. It seems he made his way originally like that. But Jacob represents trust in God. And you can read later in Genesis how he wrestled with God. And his name was changed from Jacob to Israel. He struggles with God. One path leads to judgment, the other to blessing of God's kingdom forever. And I wonder this morning, which path will you take, or which path are you on? Are you on the path of Esau, concerned about this life and what you can get and gain and enjoy? Or are you concerned about God's kingdom and trusting in God and building with God and enjoying his kingdom and his blessings? Trust in God and trust in his promises. Amen.